Today I am happy, today I am glad. I finished my 5-year course in rehab. I learned chair caning, I learned basketry, and now there's not a damsel who wants to hire me. Rehab, I'm glad, rehab.
A lot of you remember that song. It was true at one time. Unfortunately, it's still true in many places today. But one place that it's not true is at our training centers, the NFP training centers. We are changing what it means to be rehabbed. And one of the centers changing what it means to be rehabbed is Blind Incorporated, Blinding and Learning in New Dimensions. And here from Blindness Learning in New Dimensions is Al Spooner.
Thank you very much, Carl. I want to talk about change. That's a word we've been hearing a lot about as of recent. I'm not running for political office, however. I want to talk about change when it comes to the rehabilitation agencies and blindness training. And so what has changed? Well, I guess it depends on how far back we go. If we were to go back, so let's say, a half a century, which probably sounds like ancient times to some of you in the room, but it was 50 years ago that Kenneth Jernigan took over the Iowa Commission for the Blind, back then considered a pretty, they weren't ranked very high. In the course of 10 years, results from that agency, from that training center, far surpassed anybody else's expectations, any other state agencies. He got a presidential accommodation for what happened there. What changed? Was it rehab? Was it the laws? Well, yes to both of those, actually. But the biggest change was the injection of a philosophy, the philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind, that philosophy that states that we believe the real problem of blindness is not the lack of eyesight, but the lack of education that exists about it. The philosophy that says we believe that through proper training and opportunity, that a blind person ought to be able to compete with his or her sighted peers at the same kind of job. A philosophy that says we believe that blindness can be reduced to a nuisance. Well, what's changed besides that? A lot of you guys, well, I'm going to assume a lot of you know our history of the struggles of rehab in the past. Some of you in this room, I'm here this morning, were obviously part of that historical past. Some of us had to learn about it from other people. Some of us learned about it from reading Walking Alone and Marching Together. And I would say if you have not read that book, I would strongly urge you to read it. Why? Because if we're going to change our future, we need to know what our past is, what our history is. So I strongly urge you in reading that book. Because in the pages of that book, there's some comments, a section there that talks about our struggles in changing the rehab system. There's a part that talks about in the late 70s and early 80s where we, the NFB, helped some blind Minnesotans try to change rehab in the state of Minnesota. In the pages of that book, you'll see that we decided to take matters in our own hands and create 3 training centers, what we call today NFB training centers, the first in Louisiana, and later on, Minnesota and Colorado. This last Saturday, we at Blind Incorporated celebrated our 20th anniversary of training students. Thank you. We're proud of that. At the banquet last Saturday night, I got to listen to Joyce Scanlon. She is our founding executive director of Blind Incorporated. She retired about 4 years ago. And she described what went on during the beginnings and the changes over the years that we've occurred. Starting in 1988 with two students in a single-bedroom apartment, and today we're in a house. We're in the Charles Pillsbury Mansion. Yeah, it's a house. It's a 37,000 square foot house, but it's really cool. It's on a historical record. But the changes in addition to offering adult comprehensive training throughout all years or all days of the year, adding programs such as we have a senior program for our seniors in Minnesota, but having programs for our youth and our high school and college students, having programs to actually allow employees of VR agencies to come in and be a student for a while. We have a program we started just recently called the English Language Learning Program, and it's for blind immigrants who have come to the United States. They can't read English, they can't see, and they need to learn how to read, and eventually we work them into the adult program as they learn enough English. So a lot of things have changed, growing with the times as our requirements grow. The classes themselves, the curriculums in the classes have changed also. I know we probably didn't teach computers 20 years ago. The advent of the internet, the adaptive technology that we have today, just searching for a job today is different than it was 10 years ago, using the internet a lot. The resurgence of wanting to get involved in the STEM curriculum, the science, technology, and engineering and math curriculums, that has changed how and what is in the curriculum itself. So what has changed in rehab? Well, I mentioned, some raw laws and rules, and one of them that I want to point out because it's really directly affects all of us, and that is the informed choice that you hear a lot about, or I hope you do. This is what allows us to become an active participant in choosing the services and the training, education that you feel will maximize your potential and give you the biggest, best opportunity to become successfully employed. This is a very important thing to understand, and I strongly urge people to learn more about that if you don't, because it's important for you to be able to advocate for yourself, and understanding those rules and the informed choice is very important. The state agencies sometimes understand that. The biggest thing, though, I think that's changed, I shouldn't say changed, but has helped us change the rehab system, has been the National Federation of the Blind. We, as members, help change those rules, but just the rules themselves aren't enough. We help educate, advocate, and remind VR agencies from time to time of what their role is to play in this game that we're this game of life of ours. I deal with outreach and marketing, and I deal with people who are inquiring about the program, and I consequently deal with VR counselors directly. Sometimes they're really excited about this opportunity for their consumer, and some of them are very confused about it. And one of the things I see happen too frequently is the counselor wants to give you an evaluation. Now, the evaluation itself is okay. It's what they might do with that information. And what I see happen too often is they want to take a look at this evaluation and say, okay, well, you're deficient in this, deficient in that. We'll get you some training for that and that. And so once you've completed that, now you're rehabilitated and you can go get a job. And the problem I have with this little, quote, checklist process is that they don't look at you as a total individual. They don't look at the big picture, the whole picture. 50 years ago, Dr. Jernigan recognized that education and training for a blind person was not enough. He called our centers attitude shops. See, at an NFB training center, it's not an academic environment. It's a blindness submersion experience. It's, yeah, we have classes, eight hours a day, 5 days a week. But the training occurs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Students at our center are living in apartments, cooking, cleaning, getting out in the community. They're meeting, they're mingling, they're learning and networking with blind, successful blind, working blind role models, members of the National Federation of the Blind. They're learning about problem solving in the classroom and outside of the classroom. Problem solving a visual world using non-visual techniques. It's a process that of submersion that you can't get in a classroom. There's no class that can teach that. It takes the whole ball of wax, so to speak. Some of the state agencies, I'm noticing, have taken to this, and they're happy to fund training at a center like ours. We've got a few states where we've got to work a little bit harder with. We actually have, I don't know if you guys know this, we do have a student currently from New York State, from New York City, as a matter of fact. We booked the plane ticket. The two of us were going to, she was going to be here with me. Some family issues came up here just a few weeks ago, and she had to take a leave of absence. But she's going to be coming back to training right before Thanksgiving or around there. So she's in New York with her family at the moment. Otherwise, she would have been here. The training process, as I talked about, it's a submersion process, and you can't get it just in a class. It takes more than that. If you think about this for a second, if I'm going to become a stockbroker, or how about an engineer, or a pharmacist, or a scientist, chemist, let's say, those are four occupations that blind incorporated graduates are in right now. How did they do that? Well, they got education, they got skills, but how in the world do you do pharmacy? I don't even know. But they know because they had that problem-solving attitude, that problem-solving process that they took and applied. I'm going to point out the pharmacist for just a moment because that was of recent. And when this lady came to our center, she had her pharmacy degree. She still needed to do her internship. And I said, so, you're going to go back into pharmacy? And she said, are you crazy? And she gave me a list as long as my arm as why that was not possible. Now, I can't argue with her. I don't know anything about pharmacy. But I know that we can problem solve. And I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and I said, well, you know, we'll see. Well, shortly after our national convention that year, she came to Dick Davis, our jobs coach, and said, you know, I was thinking, and I think I could do this, you know, this here, this way, and I could do this, and I could do this this way. And he said, well, let's call up your college, Purdue University, and see what they have to say about it. She called them, and they said, come on over here, let's take a look at it. She flew over there, and they said, yeah. She just recently got her, just this week or two ago, got her diploma in the mail. So we're real excited about that. We had a little bell ringing for that. Carl, how are we?
5 minutes.
Okay, good. I got 5 minutes. Yes. No, I was hungry.
There's some candy corn on the table.
Okay. But seriously, though, guys, the rehab system has changed But the biggest motive, the biggest catalyst in that change has not been just the laws, but it's been people in this room, National Federation of the Blind, people that's gone before me to give me what I have had had opportunity to do when I became blind 10 years ago. The centers, when I go back to the classes, I look at, you know, I have people ask me questions like, well, and I get this a lot from people from other states, and they say, well, but my counselor says that I can get, you know, I can get Braille and computers and travel and all the stuff you got there. They've got it at this place in our state. You know, how do I explain what the difference is? You know, what is the difference even? And that blindness submersion is a big factor of it. It's hard to sometimes communicate to a VR counselor for them to truly understand what that really means, which is why we offer them to come do our program for a little while. In Minnesota, we actually have that. Our VR counselors have to go through a few weeks of sleep shade training, which we don't think is enough, but it's a start. But what drives our classes is the philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind, our belief in the capabilities of a blind person. It's that philosophy that determines what kind of classes we're going to teach. It's that philosophy that drives and determines how we're going to teach that class. The fact that we have blind role models, blind teachers, instructors, doing what we're teaching. It's that philosophy that decides what kind of changes we're going to need in the future to ensure our success in the future. It's that philosophy and the National Federation of the Blind that has continually maintained the integrity and the continuity of the classes that are offered and what is being done at an NFP training center. If someone wants to call themselves, well, and I had this happen just recently. We had a tour or a visit from, I won't state places. It was just from another state agency. And this lady called me, and they flew across the United States, and we talked, and we talked about philosophy and classes and everything I was saying. She goes, yeah, we do that too. Yeah, we do that too. Now, I know people in that state, and I know of students that have been there. We actually have one right now that was there. And so I know a little different side of that story, but I'm being polite. And then at one point she said, you know, we feel that we've taken the best of both worlds. We've taken from the NFB, the centers and their philosophy, and then we take the good stuff from the ACB and put it in there. And so we've got this great mix. And my head sunk. And I thought, okay, well, all I can do is tell her what we do, and I hope she gets it. And I don't believe that she did, actually. But I'm going to wrap it up. And do we have any time for even a question?
One question. And it'd be short.
Okay.
Or if your answer is short.
I'm going to answer very short. Yes or no, even. Maybe.
Any questions for Al? See? Around all weekend.
I will be here through tonight, and I'm out tomorrow morning. So, by the way, I want to say thank you, New York. I have never been to New York in my entire life. This is the first time, and I am absolutely excited. This has been a lot of fun, this convention so far. So thank you very much for inviting me.